The TSA, now bringing its legendary cost effectiveness to aircraft repair shops. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. There's a notice of proposed rulemaking out there to put the Transportation Security Administration in charge of security procedures at even the smallest of FAA-licensed repair stations, which apparently would include one-man shops in industrial parks that overhaul or repair non-flight-related components. In all fairness to the TSA, this idea is being forced on the agency by congressional mandate, a hangover from legislation passed in the knee-jerk aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. Aside from being a solution looking for a problem, there's the TSA cost-effectiveness issue, which the General Accounting Office recently criticized, especially in the area of deploying security technology. Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation, an institution which promotes free market solutions and known to general aviation as a proponent of aviation user fees. But Bob recently published a commentary on the TSA's track record with technology, and his observations are worthwhile background as we consider the future faced by small repair shops. Bob, thanks for joining us. I won't say you're our most popular guest, but you're one of our most listened to.
That's good. I hope always to get people thinking, and that's part of the purpose of Reason Foundation.
All right. You have two newsletters. One is called Airport Policy News, and in the November 2009 edition, you had a story headlined, GAO Rips TSA Screening Technology Development. And you talked here about some findings of the GAO about the way TSA does business that are of concern in and of themselves, but also in particular to GA pilots now, because the TSA is about to insert itself into the regulation of security issues at even the tiniest of FAA-licensed repair shops that overhaul non-flight essential components.
Now, this is really troubling and should be troubling to all GA pilots, but also to anybody who's concerned about an effective approach to dealing with security threats. What the GAO's report that I wrote about this time and many other reports have concluded is that this is an organization that doesn't really know how to set priorities or use resources in a smart way. And that problem is compounded when Congress comes along and gives out of the blue directives like this that are not based on any analysis, but are based on a feel-good idea that, well, there may be a problem out there, and so the TSA must do something about it.
Well, now, there's two sides to this problem, Bob, as I see it. One is the extent to which TSA is making our lives miserable. The other is the extent to which TSA is spending billions and billions of dollars and not really doing the effective things.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that, from a policy standpoint, is the more worrisome problem. One of the first things you learn in Economics 101 is that resources are always limited. And if you spend $5 billion on purpose A, you don't have $5 billion to spend on purposes B, C, D, and E. And that's really, I mean, one of my big concerns in the airline security area is precisely the fact that we now have this permanent program in place with, 40,000 or so people employed standing in the airports to, take little bottles of liquids away from people and harass them on their journey into the terminal secure area. And nobody's ever done any analysis that shows that that is a good use of it's actually about $4 billion a year, as opposed to other security things that could be done with those same funds. And that's a frightening thought. There has been a few studies done, one that I cited in a paper about a year ago, looking at the Air Marshals program and doing some very simple, reasonable calculations based on obviously, to some extent, on assumptions, but showing that locked cockpit doors are about 100 times more cost-effective than Sky Marshals. And that it really calls into question whether it's worth spending the money that's spent on Sky Marshals as opposed, again, to closing other loopholes that might be more of a threat to aviation.
What do we do about this?
It's a very good question, Paul. I mean, one hope that I alluded to at the end of this little article is that we have a whole new team in place. We don't yet, I believe the new TSA administrator is still the final piece of the confirmation has to happen. So he certainly hasn't really taken office and tried to put a stamp on the TSA. And we have seen a few indications that the parent agency, the Department of Homeland Security, has been somewhat more sensible about trying to use risk analysis and to think about priority setting that does not seem to have filtered down to TSA. But again, with the beginning of new leadership at TSA, there's hope that some rethinking may go on. But you know, the bigger problem I see is continues to be Congress, because Congress has the general memo method of operation, modus operandi, of legislate first, analyze later, if at all. And so, you know, they continue to give orders to the TSA to do things like this repair station thing, not based on any real analysis of how big of a problem there might be or whether there's a problem at all, and whether in the overall scheme of things, that's a good use of people's time and resources.
Well, okay, that begs the next question. You've talked about the parent agency, and you've talked about now the grandparent agency, which is Congress.
Right.
What do we do about the grandparents?
I wish I knew, Paul. I mean, in so many areas that I work in transportation policy, one of the ultimate brick walls you butt your head against is Congress. Congress loves to hand out money, and they protect jobs in their district, and they respond to interest groups, particularly those that make campaign contributions. And if you're interested in wise use of taxpayers' money and in solutions that really work, those are not the things you want to pay attention to. You want to pay attention to good analysis of problems and what things are amenable to what kind of solutions. But that seems to get little, if any, consideration when things are debated in Congress.
I'll admit my question was partially rhetorical and was leaving a door open for you to say, well, there's this thing called the U.S. Constitution, but I won't go there now.
Right. There is. And we have elections for House members every 2 years and Senate every 6 years. And, you know, I mean, I haven't given up hope that, because we occasionally get, smart people elected to Congress who seem committed to, clearer thinking and asking tough questions. The longer they stay in Washington, in most cases, the less sharp-edged they become. But there is always hope of throw the bums out and replace them with better people.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, but just briefly when we come back, I want you to tell the puffer machine story.
Okay.
My guest is Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. Back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. And we're talking about the TSA's methods of screening technology development for its risk benefit. And Bob, you talked specifically about the puffer machines, and I think this is all but become a forgotten footnote, but it's a really expensive footnote.
It's a very expensive footnote. In 2006, the TSA decided that it was time to get more serious about the threat of explosives on planes. And they were right that the task had moved beyond people taking control of cockpits and turning the planes into bombs. And suicide bombers, we now recognize, could bring explosives on board and blow them up with themselves along with them. But their solution, without any serious analysis, just some laboratory demonstrations that these machines that you stand in for 5 or 10 seconds could detect explosive particles that might be trapped on your clothes if you've been careless and wore the same clothes, et cetera. So they bought a whole bunch, they bought hundreds of these things, 200 or 300, put them out in a handful of airports to start collecting data. At least they didn't outfit all airports at once. And it turned out that in a real-world environment, humidity and dust and dirt meant they broke down a whole lot. And they also really tied up the checkpoints, because instead of a walk-through metal detector that, you know, you walk through the, you know, takes you about 1 second, you had to spend 5, 6, 7 seconds in the puffer machine in order for it to make a reading. And so that really played havoc with throughput. So the long and short of it is that they have removed them now. I don't think they're any longer in service. There's 116 of them that they never even got around to deploying in airports, that are just sitting in a warehouse, a complete, pure 100% waste of taxpayer dollars. You know, and this is an example, again, of doing things because it sounds good. Some vendor came up with a great idea and sold them on this product. They didn't do any real analysis of whether it was cost effective, even if it worked, and it turned out they didn't work. So, a big boondoggle that we had all paid for.
Well, as a 40-year ham radio operator, I got to tell you, I'm happy for government programs that provide me with spare parts to tinker with.
Yes, there is that benefit.
I will be at the auction. Well, I wanted to finish off by mentioning something you quoted as a quotable quote at the end of this newsletter. And it says here, this is attributed to an unnamed aviation reporter. Each item confiscated is presumed to have potential explosive, highly flammable, or other characteristics that could endanger life and property. As I understand it, federal health and public safety regulations require that any such suspicious item be isolated until it can be handled by experts properly attired in protective gear, who would then transport it in an explosion-proof container to a protected laboratory test cell where it could be photographed, x-rayed, measured, weighed, documented. Why is it that the public safety bureaucrats haven't raised a single eyebrow at the way TSA folks blithely toss these potential weapons of mass destruction around inside airport terminals full of people? Could it be that they, too, are in on the little secret that this is all just security theater, unquote?
I think that says it all. It really does. They obviously don't take the stuff seriously, except, you know, they go through the motions of what they're required to do. But if they really thought these were dangerous subjects, yeah, the reporter is quite right. They couldn't possibly be handling them in such a cavalier fashion.
Well, I have to point out, though, Bob, that there is one thing overlooked in this premise, and that is that it's not until you mix the Prel with the deodorant that it becomes explosive.
That's true. But if you throw them all in a bin, it's quite possible that some of the bottles would break and you'd get an inadvertent combination of two liquids.
That's true. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate these discussions. They're thought-provoking. We'll refer our listeners to the two newsletters that you offer at www.reason.org. One is Airport Policy News. The other is ATC Reform News, and they'll also find contact information for you and to get the newsletter each month if they would prefer to do that. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Always glad to be here, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.